In the modern world we live in, even here on the prairie, brevity is nearest to godliness. Most of my communications with friends, family, and even my wife are through texts, tweets, and Facebook updates. This week, I was told that the optimal length for this podcast is 23 minutes, and that I should only expect people to listen with one ear and half their attention. Our last show was 50 minutes, which means if you left early, you missed over 20 minutes of really good content. So this week, I focused on the questions I'm asking. How can I get to the golden insight in a more efficient manner? How can I tell the story I want to tell, but also uphold my responsibility to the listener and the interview subject? How do I do it in a short enough manner to hold your attention? It took a little bit of doing, but I sat down with two of the best conversation hosts in the country, Joe Bartman and Ashley Hansen, to see what wisdom they might have to share. They recommended starting every conversation with an introduction and an invitation. So in that spirit, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society. Before we jump into the conversation with Joe Bartman, I really want to set the context. We're recording this interview at the Exposure Gallery, where I have some space for the Potluck Society. It's a simple white room, and I'm sitting across the table from Joe, someone who I respect more than anyone else I know. But our paces are very different. Joe has this certain pace of the prairie, laid back, thoughtful, reflective. I have a much more spontaneous and spastic way of interacting. It might mean that some of my asides and interruptions seem out of sync with Joe, but I can't tell you how excited I am to introduce him to you. Please meet Joe Bartman.
My name is Joe Bartman. I live in the little town of Montrose, South Dakota, where my wife Jamie and I are raising four daughters. I work for a nonprofit called Dakota Resources, where we are empowering people in rural places to make their communities the kind of places where they want to live. I think of myself as a conversation host, a host for conversations that matter. And most of that, for me, happens in rural places. So the reason that I say host, and you know, a lot of people would call me a facilitator. Some people call me a community coach. But I think a host shows up to create a space and allow conversations to show up. And that's really what I try to do. And so that means I'm practicing still at showing up as a not knower.
He said not knower. He said not knower. No explanation follows this. He said not knower. I feel like he's baiting me. I feel like he's just playing with me.
I often start out by telling whatever group has asked me to come help them with something that I don't have the answers you need. I don't have the solutions, but I believe you do. And I'm going to try to help you find the questions that can break that loose, that can help you pour your wisdom into this room that is already there.
You need to understand that this is entirely sincere. This is Joe Bartman. This belief that the answers we need are in the people that have shown up is core to who he is as a human being. I can't tell you the number of times where I've been planning an event in the region, and Joe has reassured me that I need not be concerned about ticket sales, because the people that need to be there, the people that need to hear the question and provide the answers, will in fact be there. There's a faith in this process that's not religious, but is definitely spiritual. But don't let yourself get distracted. There's still this matter of not knowers and the explanation that we need. Tell me a little bit about not knowers, and I assume the inverse being knowers.
Well, I'm a knower too often, more often than I want to be, right? That's why I said I'm practicing this being a not knower. I've been practicing it for 15 years or so, still pretty low skilled at it. But I think knowers show up with an answer. I mean, a question asks what's possible and asks what else and asks what's here. And so it's a quest, right? And an answer is just an answer. An answer is the end. It doesn't open things up. It closes things down.
I don't want to exaggerate, and I don't want to overstate this. We are only 3 episodes into this Potluck Society adventure. But I think that line, that little tidbit of information may be the greatest gift that I ever give the universe. Let's listen to it again, please.
A question is asks what's possible and asks what else and asks what's here. And so it's a quest, right? And an answer is just an answer. An answer is the end. It doesn't open things up. It closes things down.
I can't decide if I think this is actually just good common sense or some sort of subversive genius. I mean, think about it. Possibility, creativity, innovation only come through open doors. Answers are closed doors. It's the questions that are open doors. It makes me just want to sit and listen to Joe.
So in my work, often people call and ask me for some answers. And a lot of people, including me sometimes, answer that invitation by showing up as an expert and showing up with a whole bunch of knowing, a whole bunch of you should try this and have you thought of that and do you know this person and have you ever tried this thing? And that's really tempting. And so being a not knower and that practice for me is resisting that urge to say, oh, I know something. I can help you. I have an answer for you. Even when it's there, even when it's just wanting to jump out of me, because I know that in most cases, in fact, probably every case, the patience and the time and the energy that it takes to practice being a not-knower is what will actually help that person more, that client or that community, to discover in themselves what's possible. And a well-placed, wicked question, wicked in the Boston sense, can totally shift people's perspective, can totally take them into a sudden jolt of self-awareness where they not only see their own handprints on whatever the problem is that they're trying to solve, but they also see the solution within themselves.
Just an update, I'm definitely leaning towards subversive genius because this is hard. This is all about ego. It's all about the time we put into experience and expertise and developing a reputation. To show up without the answers, to show up as a not knower, is incredibly difficult. But we also need to talk a little bit about what powerful questions actually are and how we might use them.
What is a powerful question?
I think what makes it powerful, what makes a question powerful is that it does something for you, that it does what you want it to do. I think that's where you start. That's where I start when I think about any question. It's about purpose. It's about something I'm interested in, but also something that I'm trying to do or accomplish. The most powerful question that I ask myself every day is in my mindfulness practice, my meditation practice. I don't know what it is exactly about it, but when I'm struggling to settle my mind a bit, to be in the present moment, because that's what meditation is ultimately, is just being fully present in this one moment that is available to us. When I ask myself this question, who am I? It's just like everything just stops for an instant.
Okay, now I know you are just messing with me, Joe. Who am I? It's supposed to settle me and slow down my mind? I haven't slept in weeks since you asked that question.
And I can have that one little instant of perfect presence in that moment. It's the kind of question, for some reason that I can't explain, just whoosh, just clears everything out for me. And it doesn't last long, but I can get little moments here and there throughout the day by just taking a breath or two. Who am I?
I don't feel present. I'm getting no sense of relief. My mind hasn't slowed down, and my ego is screaming, "You are a knower. You've got a graduate degree." But Joe asks me to look at things maybe just a little bit differently.
On the one hand, it sort of takes the pressure off being that expert, needing to be the expert. When I show up and say, "I don't have the answers. I didn't bring my wand with me today. But you do. And I'm just going to keep asking questions until you discover the solution that you need." Sometimes a powerful question is a gut thing that just shows up, and takes its shape as it's coming out of my mouth, right? And I'm sure you and probably everybody else experiences that too. But for me, there's also a nerdy way to go about crafting a question, a step-by-step process that I learned several years ago from a global network of facilitators called The Art of Hosting. So there is sort of this step-by-step, this like, okay, how do we put this question together? And then once we've put together a crappy first draft, how do we step back and review and refine and reflect on how to make that more powerful, make it do what we want it to do? Because remember, that's what a powerful question is. It's one that does what you need it to do. And sometimes you need it to do something for a group of people you're working with. Sometimes you need to do something for a community, a whole community. Sometimes you need it to do something for one person you're helping. Sometimes I need it, maybe most often, I need it for myself.
This is pretty heady stuff. Feel free to take a couple of moments for reflection on your own. All of these threads of conversation, question design, knowing, not knowing, reminded me of a traveling artist I had met in the past couple weeks named Ashley Hansen. She was the founder and creator behind Public Transformation. So I thought I'd give her a call and see what she thought about my conversation with Joe.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so well. How are you?
I am doing great as well. Thank you for asking.
Ashley and I had met while she was traveling around rural America on her public transformation project. But I don't want to get ahead of us. I want her to introduce herself and this work.
Hello, I'm Ashley Hansen, and I am a theater artist that splits my time between Minnesota and Colorado. I have a theater company called Place-Based Productions, and most recently, I created a project called Public Transformation, which was an exploration of arts and community development in rural areas in a little yellow school bus to share stories and connect rural practitioners with each other across the country.
Tell me a little bit about the seed for this specific part of the work and maybe where that came from in your broader work, and then what your goal was, what your hope was to realize out of that.
For me, it was really the election that prompted the start of this project. I felt, as someone who is based in an urban area that works primarily in rural communities, I had a job to do looking at the map of the urban-rural divide, which we all know existed, but then really, you know, saw glaringly, obviously portrayed following this most recent election.
Don't worry, there are no politics at this potluck.
There were so many sweeping statements that were being made and stereotypes that were being made in urban areas about ruralness and in ruralness about urban areas. And as somebody who kind of straddled that line and knows the falsehoods of these stereotypes, I knew I had a certain responsibility in this conversation. So, but I didn't quite know how to handle that or to tackle that or to approach that. And the way that I learn is by asking questions. And so I thought, well, why don't I just go talk to other people doing this work? And it started as really a personal pilgrimage. I was just going to pick a few communities on a road trip that I was already planning on going on. And I was just going to stop and have a chat. But after I started having conversations with some of my friends that became partners at Springboard for the Arts and Art of the Rural and Creative Exchange.
I'm going to place links for all of these organizations at thepotlucksociety.com. You can find it in the show notes for this episode.
They said, you know, I think other people besides just you are going to be interested in this information. And it's, you know, if we're able to help support this, maybe we could consider it being a longer, more engaged process. So it became this 5-week long cross-country journey, cross-country and back again, where I visited 24 different communities with populations under 10,000 and met with artists working at the intersection of art and community development to hear their story and then also to ask them, you know, how they see their role in this current political climate, if it has changed at all, if there were, you know, new revelations, if they have plans for future engagement or involvement in that conversation. But it was also, you know, for me to learn what practices are being used in the rural arts and community development field that aren't being shared at some of the national conferences and then, you know, articles and features and things like that. You know, trying to find the like not usual suspects and learn from them about their practice.
This recognition that knowledge, wisdom, creativity can flow from urban to rural, but also rural to urban, is groundbreaking. She had me so excited I can't explain it.
So the bigger goal, you know, I wish I could just give you like a one-line elevator speech answer to that, but really it was an exploration and continues to be so. So the questions that I had formatted going into this, they shifted. And the things I thought I was going to ask or learn or discover shifted. And I let each community's, you know, response to our interaction inform the next. And it really became a story sharing and practice sharing and a connecting experience, more so even than, I don't know, having some bigger underlying goal or theme or objective to come out of it. But what I did get was, you know, over 100 hours of audio and video media that now, you know, gold, I will say it is like cultural ethnography, artistry, gold, like just everything that these folks said in the different dialects and the different challenges. And I can't wait to share the stories that I was so honored and privileged to be the one to hear firsthand. As the interviewer, recognizing that there's this validation moment that happens when you're sitting down with somebody who may not have been highlighted or featured or showcased or even asked their story before. And the role you have of celebrating the really good hard work that is being done. You know, some of these folks have been doing this work pretty, this pretty challenging work that goes somewhat unappreciated for 20 or 30 years. And then to have somebody come and sit down with a video camera and, you know, ask really hard, challenging questions, and then also say thank you for what you're doing, it's very important. You are a part of a national movement that is gaining traction. Welcome to the field. Here are the resources you need to connect. You know, being able to like share those stories and resources and connecting to the broader conversation was became a really important part of my role in the project.
Joe Bartman likes to categorize people in these types of roles as facilitators, hosts, celebrants, etc., as knowers or not knowers. Does that idea of not knowing, does that resonate with you and your work? Do you feel like there were times that there was a tension in that as you bounce around, especially as you began to collect enough stories that you had become a knower along the way?
I am 100% a not knower, and I love that differentiation. I mean, I think that curiosity has always been at the core of my work. And although I have certain skills and you know, you can call it expertise, I do my absolute best in each interaction to set those aside and really allow for the whoever it is I'm talking to or whatever group I'm working with to lead that conversation while just asking questions. You know, later on in the conversation, if it comes to a point where I was like, well, actually, going back to what you said, I actually know somebody who does this and this and this, if it makes sense in the conversation, or I could send a follow-up afterward. But, you know, I feel like as soon as you kind of reclaim the power in that conversation, you lose something. If you like, if you step forward as expert, then you might get that response of like, oh, well, I don't really know what I'm talking about. So of course, you just like shut something down in that.
What's that, Joe? Did you have something you wanted to say?
An answer is just an answer. An answer is the end.
Yes, I think I became more knowing as I went, but I also didn't because each community was so different. You know, whether you're in the Central Valley of California and you're looking at, you're talking with a farmer performer who is, you know, dealing with water issues, or you're on the border in Ajo, Arizona, in the desert, and you have artists addressing, you know, folks trying to cross the border. You have, you go to West Texas and you're like in the middle of the oil fields. You go to the bayou in Louisiana. You're in the Appalachian Mountains in the coal fields. I mean, I didn't know anything about any of these places. I'm from Northern Minnesota. I know a little bit about that. But I really had my eyes opened at each step of the way. The trip was also a mobile artist residency. So I had three different artists join me for different stretches of the trip for a 1 or 2 week process. And then they are creating work based on their own experience as well. But our tagline really throughout the trip became, we know nothing about America. Every time we'd get in the car and we've had this like awesome experience and this amazing interview, we would get in the car and just say, we know nothing about America. Oh my God, we're having our minds blown every step of the way. And it complicates and challenges, you know, so much of what you think you know and what you know, your experiences have been and how you think the world should work. But then, you know, you go and visit a struggling former coal community and maybe your views on whether or not a coal mine should be open change slightly because you're talking with somebody who really needs that job. So it was more of a process of like unlearning and just listening, I think, more than anything.
We are getting precariously close to 23 minutes. Don't stop listening. It's only a couple more minutes. Yeah, what a beautiful freedom in that. What an incredible context to be able to learn is in recognizing what you don't know.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely a major humbleness that comes along with that as well. I mean, if you're willing to allow that vulnerability of not knowing, you know, you're humbled at each step of the way, and you're also gifted then with these incredible stories and revelations and, you know, gems of knowledge and information if you're just willing to like set all of the rest of your biases and ego and what you think you know aside and just receive.
One thing that we do in each episode, and I don't think that I've ever fully explained it, so I'm going to explain it to you and thus the listeners, is in Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, he writes about this concept that just lit my heart on fire as a college student, this idea of action antidotes, and specifically antidotes to apathy. And so in each episode, we take the opportunity to do a small call to action, to something really basic. One was some exploration on Wikipedia. In another episode, I asked people to write some form of a love letter to their community. What kind of an action step could someone take if they don't have 5 weeks in a school bus to drive around rural communities? What kind of action step could someone take to just get themselves a little bit out of their bubble or to connect to maybe someone with a different perspective? Does anything jump to mind?
Yeah, I think if you're in an urban area, the primary thing would be to go somewhere you haven't been before that is, you know, a rural area. And where you're, you know, you might be your ideologies might be a minority in a certain situation. And again, setting that aside, go to that place of not knowing and just have a conversation. And like, rather than see that as this moment where you can put your cultural values on this other person and have this like teaching moment, set that aside and just listen and ask deeper questions. And, you can walk away from that interaction and have all of the thoughts you want to have about what the person said. But in that moment, just letting somebody explain their side of the issue or the story without negating their cultural value system, and also just understanding that urban and rural have different cultural value systems in America. And that's okay. That's great. It should be celebrated. It shouldn't be like looked down upon, but like use it as a learning experience to say, okay, so what are the cultural value systems in this small town that's an hour and a half from my community? And what do I have to learn from this? And then I think, vice versa in rural areas, whether you're, I don't want to assume that anybody, sits on whatever side of the political spectrum, being from a certain space, but, in going to talk with somebody who is different from you in whatever way you want to explore, in a different geographic area, whether it's another small town or an urban area, and doing the same thing, just setting aside, your cultural values for the moment to just listen. And it's really hard and it's really scary and vulnerable and, to approach somebody and start asking, what their story is and then kind of inviting the conversation to take a turn toward, whether it's politics or values can be so scary for us, I guess. I don't know if it's because we're not taught it in schools or what, but, just knowing that everyone loves to share their story if the listener is asking in a respective way and being that kind of conduit for someone to share their personal beliefs in a gentle, understanding, loving way, and being open to the fact that you might also change as a part of that experience. I think that that's key. And I think that that's an action that any one of us can take at any moment of the day. Just allowing that to kind of, wash over us in not being afraid of what that might do to our own understanding of what we think we know or what we think we believe.
I think bridging this rural-urban divide is the absolute best thing we can do this week. But if it's a little bit too heavy for you, requiring a little bit too much time, I have another idea as well. I'd love to start sharing stories and ideas from the Potluck Society. Do you have a story you'd like to share? A recommendation of someone else that we should feature? Now you can call and leave your story at 605-413-1517. That number again, 605-413-1517. Just make sure that you leave contact information so we can follow up for more details. And that's it. You did it. Thank you this week to everyone at South Dakota Public Broadcasting for their partnership and support. To Carl Koiser on the audio, the team at Pony Creek Studios with our theme music local, and a special thank you to Andrew Brynjolfsson, a local designer here in South Dakota who took time out of his week to help make this program better. It has been great to see you here at the Potluck Society. We hope we'll see you soon, and as always, don't forget to bring an idea to pass.